Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to podcast number two in a very exciting series of conversations that you'll experience as part of being part of the World Petroleum Congress community. My name is Bill Whitelaw. I am the Managing Director of Strategy and Sustainability for Geologic Systems. We're a global energy intelligence firm, and today the topic is focusing on our net zero aspirations and really the need to have strong focus on global and international and domestic integration to achieve those goals. I'm here in my capacity as a volunteer with a phenomenal event that's coming to Calgary, the World Petroleum Congress this fall. And I'm honored to be the co-chair of the Carbon Tech Expo program, in addition to doing some other volunteer duties on the story that Canada gets to tell and the story that Canada gets to listen to when the world gathers for some very important dialogue this September. And with me today are two other very important Canadian energy executives who will help shed some light on what we hope to achieve here in September. Joy Romero is the co-chair of the Clean Resource Innovation Network, which is, as you'll hear in a few minutes, a network of networks doing phenomenal work. And Justin Reimer is the CEO of Emissions Reduction Alberta. And I've worked with both Joy and Justin on many files before, and I think you're going to find this podcast over the next few minutes very enlightening on what you can expect when you come to Canada. And if you're a Canadian, what you can expect to hear and take away and talk to the world about. We're really going to lay down the twin themes of innovation and collaboration. We're going to talk about the entrepreneurial spirit and the innovation ecosystem as well. And as I get Joy and Justin to explain their various organizations and the role that they play, I'd ask you to think about keeping those themes in mind about the way we collaborate domestically and internationally as energy organizations, and the way we innovate domestically and internationally. And I think you'll find that those two themes will be woven through much of the tapestry of the content that will happen in the fall. I'll just start off by saying it was a very exciting week in Calgary. This week, we announced many things about the World Petroleum Congress in terms of programming at a wonderful event in downtown. And I have to say that this is probably going to be the largest volunteer effort since the 1988 Winter Olympics. And it's going to be a phenomenal time for Canadians to shine the spotlight on themselves, and then get to lots of insights from around the world. So let's start with you, Joy. You're also a senior executive in our industry with CNRL, Canadian Natural Resources Limited, one of the biggest investors in clean tech as a corporation as well, big supporter of CRIN and a variety of other things. But help the world understand what CRIN is, the Clean Resource Innovation Network, how it's composed, and how it really is driving one of the main cylinders of our energy sector's decarbonization movement.
Thank you, Bill. That's a great intro to try and share with you and obviously Justin and the world that are coming to Calgary just exactly, you know, what is CRIN. So our vision is that Canada is the leader in clean hydrocarbons from source to end use. And while our focus is the Canadian innovation ecosystem, anybody listening here, regardless of where you are in the world, can join CRIN. And getting to net zero is a global problem, and we need global solutions. So you can join CRIN, and it's, you know, do that before you come. And you can do that at cleanresourceinnovation, all one word, .com. No fee, though you do need to sign a social contract to commit to work in the spirit of CRIN. And that's really important. And so why would you join? CRIN is a virtual network of networks where you can connect with the clean tech ecosystem. And we build on what already exists. And you'll hear a little bit more about that as we flow through this podcast. Our members are innovators, and that's entrepreneurs, academics, government researchers, anybody that's on that front end of developing good ideas that we need as solutions. Service providers, from drillers to accelerators, funders, from angel investors to governments to large cap VCs, that entire spectrum from funders, adopters, oil and gas companies, but also remember I said end users of our product, and also super important is talent developers. We work together to ensure that we are finding solutions to achieve our vision. Looking forward to the help of the world to do that. So very excited.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. And when we come back to talk about Krina again, we'll explore the seven theme areas, which are fundamentally areas of focus which Canada can share with the world because they've been constructed to be international in their context. And we'll also talk about the new interactive Krina ecosystem map that is a critical part of membership. So, but a huge part of the Krina community of practice is Emissions Reduction Alberta, a phenomenal government agency that works at arm's length from the government and has been part of Alberta's decarbonization story for many, many years. It does a whole lot of things, and I'm going to get Justin to reflect on everything from running the legislation of which one of the only regulated carbon markets in the world works under, to the way that system funds innovation as well. So Justin, just some high-level comments about Emissions Reduction Alberta, which already has a global reputation.
Thanks very much, Bill, and a real pleasure to be here with you and Joy today. So great to be talking to you in advance of the World Petroleum Congress. We're very excited about hosting this in Calgary this year. It's a phenomenal opportunity. So Emissions Reduction Alberta has been around for over a decade. Most people don't recognize, but Alberta was one of the first jurisdictions in North America to put a price on carbon for our high intensity emitters. And through that fund generated, a good chunk of it is invested back into innovation and technology. And it's our organization, one of the key organizations that reinvests that funding back into industry, into various technologies that both reduce greenhouse gas emissions, as well as create economic opportunity within the province. So with our 10 or plus years of track record, we've invested over $900 million up to date in hundreds of projects across the gamut with oil and gas in the agriculture industry, cement, fertilizer, a variety of other areas, forestry. And we're seeing tangible results. We typically invest in the larger projects at the later technology readiness level scales. So in industrial deployment of technology, things that are quite expensive, we provide our funding through grant funding. And our funding ratio on our projects on average is now 7 to 1. So for every dollar ERA invests, we see $7 contributed through the federal system or more importantly, the private sector. And we're getting all kinds of significant leverage through this funding. We've seen substantial reductions in our greenhouse gas emissions as a result of deployment of these technologies. And I'm happy to talk to you in a few minutes about some of the specific examples of projects that we've provided. But we are just one player within the Canadian innovation ecosystem. We work closely with CRIN, with Joy's group. We work with a group, our sister agency, Alberta Innovates, who does earlier stages of investment on the technology readiness level scale and clean tech, and a host of others. And it's really important that we collaborate with these service providers, and these funders, and these experts to help bring our technology to market and see deployment for the benefit of both the economy and the environment.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Justin. And I do want to pull on those threads of the pan-Canadian context of both CRIN and Emissions Reduction Alberta as we go further into the conversation. But Joy, I heard a number the other day. It was fascinating to me that there's over 4,000 members now in the CRIN family ecosystem. And it's phenomenal. They're big, they're small, they're spread across the country, and they're all touching clean resources in one form or another. So could you reflect for a bit at a high level on the seven CRIN theme areas, but also infuse that with a comment about the way CRIN operates in terms of some of the fascinating competitions that are put out there to let the cream rise to the top?
So yes, thanks. Our seven theme areas are cleaner fuels and reducing carbon intensity and obviously getting to net zero, digital oil and gas, low emissions value-added products, novel hydrocarbon extraction, novel land and well site remediation, methane monitoring, quantification and abatement, and water technology development. So what we did with those seven theme areas is we actually went to what are the things that we can't solve? What are the, where are our issues? What is it that we need to do in these areas to actually get that Canada is a global leader in clean hydrocarbons from source and use? And so we rolled those up into three competition areas, and we were very fortunate to receive $80 million in federal funding to put towards this. And we, one of those competitions actually was executed by Emissions Reduction Alberta for us, because remember, we don't duplicate what somebody else already does well. And so what was really unique about this as well is that one of the criteria is that it had to be an SME, a small medium enterprise, so a new technology provider coupled with a producer. And what that brought forward was actually over 100 late stage technologies. So in essence, every single one of those is a solution. Now, we were only able to award funding to 27 of those, but you know, that's not where that stopped. We actually highlighted all of those members that went forward, and we highlighted them on our CRIN platform that we call Innovation Central, and which is a really neat way of making sure that not just Canadians that are looking for solutions, but anybody around the globe can actually find these technology solutions that have this producer pull or end user adopter pull associated with them, which is really important. So yeah, we're really excited about what we were able to do with that funding and working with our partners like Emissions Reduction Alberta, just really, and Pan-Canadian, Mars was a partner with as well as that's out of Ontario, for those that don't know, and out of BC was Foresight. So we're really excited with what transformed and came to us as a result of this work.
Well, both CRIN, the Clean Resource Innovation Network, and Emissions and Reduction Alberta will be involved in the Carbon Tech Expo at this year's World Petroleum Congress. And I would just stress that the theme, of course, and it's an honor for Canada to host a Congress with a theme that is all about net zero and the various transitioning pathways, technologically, regulatory, social pathways. And it's an honor for Canada, as I always sort of joke to myself, that this is really the World Petroleum Pivot Congress, the WPPC. Justin, you know, ERA, we've got your talented Mark Summers on our organizing committee, and he'll represent the vast part of the ecosystem that he pops up in all the time. But maybe you could reflect on your international context for the global conversations you have about the way Alberta does its carbon markets, its tier regulation, and, you know, what you've learned from talking to international and global leaders and what they've learned from talking to you, and how that might show up as curated content in our Carbon Tech Expo.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, so, you know, as I mentioned, ERA, we've had about a decade's worth of experience of investing in technologies and working with climate funds to see deployment and reductions of greenhouse gas emissions in a multiple array of areas. And it's a unique organization that many other jurisdictions are in the process of thinking about and contemplating creating similar type organizations as they have carbon funds to allocate public funds and see greenhouse gas reductions as well as achieve economic growth. And I was at COP in Egypt at the end of last year, and it was exciting to see we had a strong Alberta contingent, just the various things and similar issues that every jurisdiction is struggling with in this whole area. And there are a few areas that I think Alberta has demonstrated some global leadership in that other jurisdictions were interested in, that we could be sharing our technology, our best practices, as well as lessons learned and mistakes and failures we've made and learned to how to adjust from those. So a couple of areas that Alberta has demonstrated some real strength in are carbon capture and sequestration. We have some currently actually deployed industrial CCS projects in a good handful of them within North America, and many more on the way. Alberta has some of the best geological structures to do CCS in the world, and a strong regulatory system to enable that. And this is actually going to be, I believe, a tipping point year to see some more investments made in a significant way in oil and gas, in cement, in fertilizer, in electrification. So it's across the gamut. Hydrogen production, net zero hydrogen production. We had Air Products announce their first net zero hydrogen production unit that they're currently under construction, and ERA was a funder into that project. Joy can talk much better to this, our methane reduction and abatement. We're global leaders, and the U.S. and other jurisdictions are looking to learn from we're an example for, both in terms of regulations, but technological investments and other incentives, and they all need to work in concert to see dramatic reductions in those areas. One of the things we're beginning to do more of is partnering with global entities to foster international investments in technological development. So we participate with the ACT Consortium, which is generated out of Norway, on carbon capture sequestration. There's other European Union funds that we're leveraging our funding with, because technology doesn't have borders. And so we need to leverage the best in class technology from around the world. There needs to be a net benefit for Alberta in terms of our funding and our mandate, but we need to be looking at companies across the globe that can be deploying these technologies, and how do we get them from their earlier stage of development into full technological deployment. So lots of lessons learned and experiences to share.
And, I think that it's very important that the Friday of the World Petroleum Congress will be what I call Field Trip Friday. Yeah. And we'll be taking a variety of delegations to a variety of things, including the Shell Quest CCS project up in the Edmonton area. And it's also a phenomenal opportunity to sort of take a tour around Alberta's industrial heartland and see, because I'm going to get to reflect on the economic impact of the integrated natural gas CCS hydrogen growth. But I don't want to make this all about technology and process and that sort of thing. Let's talk about people for a moment. And you know, I just marvel, being a CRIN volunteer myself, at how much I learn. I would pay to actually go to the CRIN meetings, and fortunately it's free. But it's a phenomenal volunteer spirit of professionals from all walks of energy and clean resources life that make the thing actually work. So maybe, Joy, I mean, you've been involved with CRIN right from the birth of it. Talk about the people power of CRIN in terms of, and what you've seen, how some of those key volunteers like the Jason Switzers of the world have grown themselves.
Well, I mean, we often talk about organizations and we talk about companies doing things, but actually they don't. It's people that do things. And so it's actually what's really important is connecting people so that they can get things done. And that really is what CRIN does. So even if like a company like mine is a member of CRIN, and our president, registered as a member of CRIN to give that company, it's actually the hundreds of members inside of my company that are members of CRIN that make things happen. And what's super important is that CRIN is volunteer led. We are so fortunate to have some staff that work with us to facilitate us to be able to come together. But it's the volunteers that drive what's important to us, regardless of which sector that you come from. 4 or 5 years in, when we have our steering committee meetings, and literally we pull people from all levels of government, people from across the entire country, every different facet that's necessary in an innovation ecosystem to bring a technology from ideation all the way through to commercialization and adoption. And it's because I don't want to ignore that these people come together to foster these technologies to be able to make their way through on that journey to net zero. And their dedication isn't waning. which is phenomenal. It just seems to increase. And it's gone from those three members to 4,000, as you said, of people that come together to drive this purpose, which is absolutely phenomenal. So, and we enable people to step up to wherever they want inside of these theme areas, inside of the different sectors that are there. And one of the really cool things that we're doing right now is we've actually pulled together an ecosystem map led by Global Advantage that ties together the Canadian innovation ecosystem, and it's live and it's interactive. So you can actually find those people literally across the country, whether they work with Justin, whether they work with you, Bill, whether they work in Newfoundland, or whether they're with our federal government, whether they're a funder in NRCan or a researcher in NRCan, or they're in BC in the clean tech space there. We literally span the entire country and you can find the people. And what's really cool is if you come to the Carbon Tech Expo, you can actually hop into this map. We'll show you how to do it. And if you become a CRIN member, you can actually hop in there and do that now. So we want you to come. We want you to be a part of this and be a part of these people that make stuff happen.
That is so well put. I was privileged to attend the unveiling of the latest edition of the ecosystem map, which I should add in the context of this conversation, has a huge global component, right? As you navigate, you're not only navigating Canada, you could sort of, it's a window for the world to look in on Canada and a window from which Canada can look out onto the world. And that's hugely important. And I was teasing one of the CRIN volunteers, Glenn McCrimmon, that he's so caught up that he should legally change his name to Glenn McCrinnan, and he thought that was hilarious. So, just on this whole way the system works, Justin, the other day I was reviewing the 26 CCUS projects that are under consideration. And could you reflect, I mean, part of why we can do these things at speed and scale is, I mean, this is the basin that we've been understanding for well over a century. We know the geology. What's interesting to tell the world right now is, we work in the service of Canadians. The Canadians own the molecules and they own the pore space that provides so much of the way we do and the quality of life that we live. But maybe if you could reflect, and I realize you can't talk about specific projects, but what I'm fascinated by is when I see the names of cement companies and midstream players and upstream players, and it's, to me, it is the scale of the economic opportunity while cleaning things up. Ever cleaning is phenomenal. And, government's going to have some hard choices about how to choose from some pretty top class projects. But maybe you could just reflect at a macro level that's a point that delegates coming from around the world should look at the way we're managing that process with all the integrated ways and means that we're looking at what the best projects will be and how we'll enable them. And they're not all just in the Edmonton area.
No, that's exactly right, Bill. So it is, as I mentioned, a big, a significant year or two in the next couple of years to see more of these industrial CCS projects come to fruition and move to final investment decision. And a lot of us in the government system and in industry are trying to figure out what it's going to take to get these projects to final investment decision right now. There's, I think you said 26 different projects. ERA itself, our group is funding, helping to fund 11 different feasibility studies across these industries, not just oil and gas, but cement and electrification, natural gas combined cycle projects. And there's a lot of work that the government's been doing in terms of allocating pore space and making the regulations clear, working on things like liability and other critical policy developments so that companies have a straightforward path in terms of moving this forward. There's been a number of technologies being considered. The amine technology is one of the most focused on, and there's a lot of different projects looking at that, but there are some other technologies we're keen to see demonstrated in Alberta as well and not put all our eggs in one particular basket. So there needs to be a lot of clarity for industry in terms of policy, carbon pricing, and assurances around pore space and a variety of things along the construction cycle. These are massive billion-dollar investments, billion-plus investments. And one of the things we've been saying is, as we have, say, 26 projects going on and being looked at in the province, they can't all go at once. These have massive supply chain implications that not only Alberta, but around the world, these projects are going to require serious amounts of equipment and labor. And so we want to make sure we're looking at a holistic approach and timing approach for these projects into the future. So we're not all rushing to see a bunch of projects constructed all at once, that we actually see a more graduated timeline in terms of these investments, so we can do them on time and on budget, and we have the necessary labor and skill to put them forward. So we're actually convening a CCS executive roundtable for all the organizations looking at constructing these and learning from one another. This is going to take a much more collaborative approach than perhaps a lot of typical industry investments. We're going to have to learn with one another, share the successes and the failures and the challenges, understand what the policy barriers are, understand at a high level what the economics dictate and require, and geological investment understanding to make sure not all these projects are going to have the same basin and the geological formation to work with. So it's going to require adjustments along the way.
Absolutely. And I think for folks coming internationally, I would point out that Canada is also home to the International CCS Knowledge Center. We've been sequestering CO2 at the Shell Quest, but we've also been doing in a very interesting transnational way at the Weyburn Midale Field and the Boundary Dam project. And that has built up a phenomenal archive of engineering and geological knowledge that James Miller and his team are heading up right here. And so that they'll be a key part of the process. But just as we navigate to the end, I want to pick up on two themes, because I don't want people to think that the CTX Carbon Tech Expo is the only thing happening. There's going to be, a super cool Canadian presence woven throughout the strategic conference. Canada did very well in terms of abstracts and papers that will be delivered at the technical conference. Canada is going to show up very, very, very nicely overall. But the World Petroleum Council has, as part of its framework, a very strong youth leadership component, and that's going to be a big part. So as we close, I would ask you to both reflect on two things: the importance of young people attending, because at the end of the day, a lot of this stuff will be on their leadership shoulders down the road. And the other thing that will be a very strong Canadian message is the incredibly important role our Indigenous communities and First Nations friends are playing in some of these major projects in particular. And Indigenous communities represent the single largest cohort of human capital opportunity in many ways. And so just, Joy, your thoughts on the importance of youth casting out to 2050 and carrying the burden, and any thoughts you might have on the importance of Indigenous participation as equity partners in major projects and that sort of thing. And I'll get you to reflect on the same things, Justin, as we close here. So,
sure.
So when I went through, who are the members of CRIN and the various sectors that are there, and executing across all of this in those areas are in fact youth in students, and so student energy. And when we talked about network of networks, student energy is a member of CRIN. They're 40,000 strong around the world. Other student bodies are within Canada, and also young professionals. And I think that's a really important part. We actually pull together a network of seven different young professional organizations across the country and facilitate. And Avatar, probably hear more about that as you move through, are focused on helping these young professionals put their brain power in solutions to exactly in this space. So, and they are the our future leaders, you know, those two groups are exactly, and so that they understand the full spectrum of what's possible, how important energy systems are, all forms of energy as we go forward. Indigenous peoples have always been a part of energy development. They, oil and gas industry is the largest employer of Indigenous peoples across the, our country. Those partnerships are only improving, and that presence and their guidance inside CRIN has been with us since day one. And so really super important, both on our board, in our committees, in our in our theme areas, in our steering committee, that voice is there, that we make sure that we're in lockstep as we move forward. So we're very grateful that both of these groups feel that this is worth their time and energy to be a part of CRIN, to make sure that we are complete and whole as we move forward.
Well, thank you very much for that. And I, you know, Justin, as you reflect on the same themes, and just before I get you to speak, I'll sort of get you to talk about ERA's support for the Energy Futures Lab, which is another critical, you know, sort of sometimes not so young leaders, but you know, primarily focused on young leadership, and would also invite you to sort of reflect on the way ERA, from a governance perspective, thinks about these things, you know, in terms of our carbon markets and that how they'll impact down into the future, and then we'll I'll just do a brief summary and we'll call it a day. So, over to you.
Hey, and thanks, Bill. So, Alberta is really on the cusp of doing some significant work, and already is in process of doing some significant work around the energy pivot. And when we talk about that, there's often a perception by youth of that they don't see a place for themselves in the petroleum industry, and they're not sure of the future of where that industry is going. And I see such tremendous opportunities for youth to be engaged in facilitating the pivot and actually make it happen. Not just talking about it conceptually, but actually bringing the skill set from engineering to construction, to operations, to senior management, to technology development. And Alberta is one of the few jurisdictions in the world right now where you're seeing a lot of these investments take place, and we need young talent to enable it and sustain it long term and get us to where we need to go in a net zero future. So there are significant opportunities for youth engagement in making the world a better place to what we want to achieve. And again, by actually doing it and putting it in the test ground that is Alberta right now, in moving a lot of these transition elements in a whole number of spheres, that it really excites me. And we are seeing a lot of youth engaged and being educated and trained both in school and in practice on facilitating this energy transition. So we're very supportive of that from an ERA perspective in terms of the what we can support. There's a conference we're supporting that's happening in our province, where a teacher, a mother of a student in Red Deer, you must know this, Bill. Yes. I can't remember the name of the conference, but she realized that her child wasn't getting the best education in terms of what was really going on in terms of energy transition in this province. And she took it upon herself to organize a conference to educate students about what's really going on in terms of energy transition, what steps the oil and gas industry is taking to move to net zero, what we're doing in renewables, what we're doing in a variety of different areas. And we need more support and engagement around things like that to better educate our youth around the real opportunities, and not just the political rhetoric you hear in some of the media these days. On the Indigenous side, we're very pleased to be working with groups like Alberta Indigenous Opportunities Corp. Yep. And other organizations that are facilitating Indigenous investment into energy projects, into industrial projects. And there's all kinds of co-funding opportunity, as well as Joy mentioned, they're a significant part of the labor force, and there's all kinds of human capital potential. But it's just as important on the decision-making and the strategic investments and on the management side that we work closely with our Indigenous partners to get them their perspectives and help understand how to do this in a better way than we would without that engagement. So we're very interested in those aspects, as well as all the diversity elements that we need to have a better holistic approach to how we do this into the future. We're all learning and growing together.
That's extremely well put by both of you. I had to laugh because I was working with Dagmar Knudsen, the founder of 10 Peaks Innovation, earlier this week. And I was pointing out to her that her conference this year is October 12th at Red Deer Polytechnic. Yes. And that I said, you know, what we're going to do is with my WPC volunteer hat on, is we're going to make sure a huge contingent of your teachers and students who are participating in your conference will be able to come down and participate in some dimensions of World Petroleum. And then you can start to see. But that's also a shameless plug for people coming from around the world to have a look at the way our education system works in this province. To Justin's point, it's improving all the time. But our post-secondary community, our universities, our polytechnics, our colleges are doing some phenomenal energy transition programming, you know, and we don't have enough time today because this would be a 5-hour podcast if we got into all of that conversation. But I want to thank you both for your time. If you're a delegate listening to this, thinking about coming, bring a lot of paper because you're going to make a lot of notes. The Clean Resource Innovation Network and Emissions Reduction Alberta are just many of the phenomenal acronyms that you'll be exposed to as part of the WPC experience. And we're really looking forward to hosting the world. And more importantly, we're also looking forward to learning from the world as all of that global expertise and passion comes here. So thank you very much, both.
Thank you, Bill.